Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You'll find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's get started.
My name is Adam Homey. I'm your host, and I am once again honored by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. The Business Creators Radio Show is a From the Field podcast. It takes you to those places where you have those mastermind conversations and aha moments, which move you closer to serving from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. Sometimes you may hear a bird chirping, a car driving by, ambient conversational noise from the next table. We don't do this from a $25,000 deluxe Hollywood soundproof studio because that's not where the magic happens. It happens when you place yourself in those situations where you're going to meet people and get hands-on with situations that are going to give you some of your most profound discoveries. So at the Business Creators Radio Show, we create or recreate that for you. Today, we're going to have ourselves a very interesting conversation with somebody I've been chatting with here in the green room here for a moment. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about his background. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what he's doing. And then we're going to hear a lot from him. His name is John Filippo Floridia. And he is a former theater actor turned freelancer turned business owner. He started his marketing journey in 2005, which is actually right around the time I did. And dropped his high-paying job. Well, I dropped a job. I wouldn't call it high-paying. To become a freelancer. Well, kind of what I did. He moved to London without any guaranteed job or even money to fly home. Didn't do that, although I did get out of my parents' house in a big hurry. His daily mantra, today is a great day to find a job, helped shape his mindset of looking for good opportunities in the United Kingdom. Things got better with his hard work, grit, and perseverance. He became one of the most sought-after freelancers of several London design firms. With his skills and experience, he founded Floridia Creative, a digital marketing agency based in Zurich, Switzerland. His company has been helping different brands with their social media marketing, web design, Google brands, and rebranding. He worked with several brands in Switzerland, like UBS, Bayer, and Swiss Hotel Hotels and Resorts. And we're going to have a conversation about digital marketing, and part of it's going to be about how to opening your business's second brand. This is a particular interest to me because I'm constantly working on new brands. I'm testing things in the marketplace before I evolve them into brands. I'm on the edge of my seat, ready for this one. And you as the listeners are going to love this too. John Filippo Floridia, come on in. The weather's fine.
Wow. Thank you a lot, Adam. That was such an introduction. I don't think I ever had such a great introduction in all the speech I did. That's awesome. Thank you. And once again, you said, like we were speaking before, you said my name perfectly, John Filippo Floridia. That's not for everyone. So as you said, and as your people will listen, my accent says everything. I'm originally Italian. And I was born in Switzerland, but I grew up in a little town in Sicily. So okay. I bring with me my little accent from down there.
Very good, very good. So speaking of your journey, I read off the official version of your bio. So impressive. I'm not sure I'm worthy to be here in your presence. This is my show. But what we like to do is go a little bit deeper before we get into the content for our listeners. And tell us a bit, if you would, tell us something about what has inspired you along your journey as you have made that trek toward where you are today, serving from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion.
Of course. I mean, it's actually everything started when I was a kid. I always love to design and sketch and create new ideas and so on. But in the meantime, I wasn't very, very good at school. So, yeah. And that's one of the reason I dropped with just 17, because probably I was just bored. I mean, it's funny because all my teacher, they were saying, hey, John, your little sketches everywhere on every book and everything, it will not bring you anywhere. So be careful what you're doing. So I dropped the school at 17. I started to look for a job, and I found the first job on a newspaper, where slowly they realized that I was pretty creative, and they gave me some little sketches or some. I had a column on this newspaper and started to design. From there, long story short, I went to a design school in Zurich. At the time, I was living in Zurich, and even there, very quick, maybe it was my Sicilian blood. You know, growing in Sicily, you have to be a little bit street style or street smart, let's say like this. I started this design school, and I realized pretty quick that I said, okay, I need to study here 4 years. For doing what? Doing a portfolio. So what I did, I created my portfolio in the first 6-7 months. I presented an agency, and the agency just hired me as a designer. And then everything moved so quick and so crazy that at that time, I decided to move to London. I didn't have anything because, of course, I mean, it was small money. I moved to London, and in London, I didn't have nothing. Nobody wanted to work with somebody that barely could speak English, didn't have any culture of English design and so on. And it was at the beginning kind of a disaster, until I didn't have any money to go back home, any money to stay there. And finally, I don't know how it happened. Yeah, thanks to the mantra that you said before, I started to wake up every morning and say, hey, today is a great day to find a job. And this was my mantra for maybe a month or two. And suddenly somebody called me and said, listen, we need you, and come over. We need some design. And they started like this. And to finish this, it was funny because these guys, they even told me, listen, would you be ready to work even in the night? And since I didn't have anything to do and I really wanted to work, I said, hey, guys, of course. I mean, I can work 24 hours. I mean, I don't care. So I really signed this contract. I could never imagine that that agency at that time was calling me almost every second day at 4 o'clock in the morning, because we had to finish some very important presentation. And from them, you know, from there, it was a great, great escalation. Started to work with very big companies in design agencies in London. And then at one point I realized, wow, okay, maybe it's time to go back to Switzerland. And it was 2005 when I came back. I came back with some clients, and I came back in Switzerland kind of with my little victory, where I opened my agency that today is still working.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. So what I want to dive into here is, first of all, let's define our terms. And this is going to sound like the most trite question in the world, but I love defining terms, because so many folks have different definitions of it. How do you define the term digital marketing? What does that mean to you?
Digital marketing for me is something very old. And it's funny because it is old. And I will tell you at the end of this great question, actually. You know, it's digital marketing. It's, for me, is the art of, you know, showing your product or your project to somebody. And, you know, it's when I think on digital marketing, and for me, it's I remember the market, the mercato in Italy, you know, where the people were selling, people meet, people has value. And this is all in marketing. It's an exchange of value and trying to show the product to somebody else and sell the products to somebody else through the marketing. And digital marketing, once again, old. Why old? Of course, it's a provocation. Because at the beginning, it was everything was marketing. There was radio ads, it was billboards, there were everywhere was kind of a marketing. And then it came the area of the digital. Somebody put the digital because it was suddenly came the Google, it came the apps, it came web design. But now this is something that is now and is happening all the time. And all these apps and all this platform, they're already there for a while. So old because we should change it again. We shouldn't call digital marketing. We should call marketing because nowadays is how you present your products is through marketing. And if you do in a digital way, yes, this is the digital marketing. I would say digital marketing should be called now marketing. And maybe we can call the other marketing before just classic marketing. You know, like so yeah, in short for me is what digital marketing is the art to show your product in a, let's say, in a little bit modern way, in a digital way.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up where you call digital marketing old and you suggest we just call it marketing. We're at the point now where I've been living in Las Vegas for almost 9 years. The day I arrived after driving cross country and after having a few weeks earlier shipped most of my possessions ahead of me was November 8th, 2013. I remember that day, it was a Friday. I'd just driven 3 days. I'd gotten in very late the night before, so I got a hotel room the last night. And then that Friday morning, I went to the management office for the duplex I'd already rented. I just needed to pick up the keys, got to the duplex. Mm-hmm. Called the place where all my stuff I'd shipped in was being stored, had it brought over. Then I went to the grocery store, actually filled my refrigerator. Oh, I know, it's weird, right? There was actually enough in there to prepare meals. Wow. I looked around. I saw I had no furniture because I donated it all before I moved. I'm gonna go out of sequence here slightly, but later on that night, what happened is I didn't have any furniture in the place. So I had this inflatable mattress I brought with me that I'd owned for several years already. And I'm thinking, okay, this inflatable mattress will get me through a couple of days. I shipped ahead my television and my DVD player so that I could watch, I mean, what would be the most fitting movie to watch on your first night living in Las Vegas? Casino. We weren't even through the first. We weren't even through the first monologue, and I had my six-month-old kittens, Princess Alessandra and Princess Stella, who had never seen an inflatable mattress before. We weren't even through the opening monologue of the movie Casino, and already. Fortunately, earlier that day, I had gone to a local furniture store and ordered a bedroom set, a living room set, a dining room table, and a few other things. See, rather than ship my old furniture, which would have cost about the same amount of money to do, I just donated it locally, figured I'd buy new stuff. But anyway, how did I find that furniture store? I pulled up, I went to that yellow page that was sitting on my counter. No, I took out my smartphone, opened up the Chrome browser and typed my zip code, 89128, everybody knows that. 89128 furniture store. Gave me a list, looked at the ratings, found the one I liked most, went there first. They had what I needed. I placed an order. We did business. So later on that night, my mattress is deflated. I'm going to be sleeping on a hard floor. The only piece of furniture I have in there other than that deflated mattress for the moment is a folding chair. Because my new furniture is not arriving until the next day. And next day delivery was great, but it was still next day. So I'm thinking, this is going to be a rough one here. What can I do? It's 7:30 at night. Pulled out my smartphone again. I typed cigar lounge, 89128, let's go. I added let's go just to be trite. And turns out there was actually a very nice cigar lounge about 3/4 of a mile from me. 15 minutes later, I was in one of their deluxe chairs, lighting up a VSG. Now, what just happened? Furniture store, cigar lounge. I searched globally to find locally. Furniture store was 10 minutes away. the cigar shop was technically within walking distance if I was feeling athletic that day. But I went to the internet to find things that were in my own backyard.
Of course.
So I'm thinking of this story. It just came to the top of my consciousness when you shared the part about how digital marketing is actually an old term and we should just be calling it marketing.
Of course, because nowadays is everything is marketing. You know, it's funny because there is many terminology around marketing. In the end, is everything so simple? Because do you see, you were looking for something. You took your phone. You look for your chair, for your furniture, and so on. But it's funny because nowadays there is so many people when they speak about marketing, especially digital marketing. Many people, they confuse the digital marketing, confusing with all this terminology, SEO, CTA, CTR, and all this difficult terminology. But in the end, if you think digital marketing, you have to think like it's the soul of your product. What you want to sell? You want to sell furniture? So you have to bring it all the story about your furniture in a way that's nowadays, of course, Google, it's the algorithm of Google, it's super intelligent, in a way that people can find it in simple words. So you have to speak on Google, on digital marketing, really in a simple way, so that a person like you did. I mean, at one point you were looking for a cigar lounge around the corner. Boom, you found it and go. And, you know, like somebody put the right keywords there so to let you enjoy the cigar lounge over there.
Correct. So I want to sort of jump ahead here and get to the core of what we're going to be talking about today, John. You mentioned that what you wanted to share with us in part was how you helped a client of yours, or maybe it was your own business, open a second brand using digital marketing, yeah, which we're going to call marketing. So tell us how marketing, see, I'm going to break myself of the habit, helped an existing company create a second brand. I'm going to ask that very broadly because this is something I'm very curious about.
Actually, it's this is a very, very interesting case. This was a guy that when he contacted us, I just fall in love with his case because he's the same age like me, the same situation, coming from Italy, living here in Switzerland. And at one point, he was kind of bored about doing the same job for so many years. And he told me, look, I bought a company and it's a 60 years old company. I don't know anything about marketing. I know how to do my job, but I don't know how to bring this company to the next level. So for us was kind of a challenge. So for each client, we really studied with the entire team. We sit together. We studied the story about the company, how it grew, what they do, and so on, trying to really deeply understand what this company was doing. They are doing air conditioning system and plumbing, all this kind of construction jobs. And for us, was even a challenging because we never had a client like this. Actually, it was even not such a huge client like other that we are working with. So the challenge, as you can understand, was even greater. So the first thing what we did is really to how can I say to find what is the right market for this company. And suddenly we realized that this company didn't have, of course, 60 years old, didn't have any presence on social media, no communication at all, no promotional material, nothing, really nothing. This guy, even before us, hired another agency, which tried to make a logo, brand design, but they confused even more. So it's, but how exactly we did it, we tried to understand who were really the decision maker of you know, the clients that is gonna pay for it. So, and we figure out that architects, they would be the best clients for this company. So yeah. The next step, what we did, we took around, I think there were around 300. We select 300 of the best architects all around the area where he was, where the first office was. And we started to create, you know, a buyer's journey. So we create an email campaign with a buyer journey, which was the awareness. You know, we had to create the awareness, like, may I have this problem? Then the consideration, you know, if they are looking for a solution, and then in the end, the decision. So we create all this email campaign, where then we put it in a funnel, and we started to contact all these people. And you know, the first step was the showing the know of the company, showing that this guy is bought this company, but we are now the company is completely new, is modern, and so on. And then you know, out to this, we got slowly the trust of this all these architects. Long story short, the results was that with kind of emails, we reach a 40, almost 45% opening rates of this of those emails, when the industry average here in Switzerland for this kind of emails is maximum 20-25%. So it was a big success. Thanks first the email campaign, but even because we found this right people. Then of course we worked on all the brand. We had to redesign completely everything, from the car, from the business cards, from the anything that's possible. We redesign completely everything, and we had to step, you know, doing everything much faster, because he didn't have lots of time, because he already launched the company. The company wasn't ranking like he should online. Nobody was founding him. So the next step that we did, we in a record time, we managed to meet him in half day. We did a photo shooting. We did a video, little videos, funny videos. And then I tell you later, through LinkedIn, we play some crazy videos that you shouldn't do here in Switzerland, but we did. So we create kind of funny videos, like TikTok style or something like this, something that's a construction company of this level, like 60 years old construction company. They don't come with a TikTok video on LinkedIn, like TikTok style with emoji or all this stuff. And all this brings something different, and especially because we used as a platform. I don't know in US how LinkedIn, how strong it is, but
in Europe, pretty big deal.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because in Europe, and especially in Switzerland, is getting stronger and stronger. And but people are very polite. Let's say in Switzerland, in Zurich, the German part of Switzerland, people are super polite. So they're using the platform LinkedIn, like, hey, this is a business platform. Let's present my resume. Let's present our business, but in a elegant. So we came on this platform LinkedIn with ideas, very crazy ideas. We just came with those videos, And I don't know, I have in my mind as an idea, like, imagine you go to a gala where everybody is with a tuxedo and you go wearing like a pank. So it's what we did with him on LinkedIn. We just really put everything upside down, and the results was great. I mean, it's they got numbers, crazy numbers. I mean, it's like we got up to 15,000 impression in less than 2 months. So, which here in a small country like Switzerland, it's a very, very big number. So it's more kind of this way, like I would call it in a guerrilla style, where usually people act in an elegant way. We came in and we brought this new phase of this company, which is not now 60 years old anymore, but it's a young and successful company. What it happened is that suddenly it came even some bad news, like the company, the homepage was not ranking very well. We didn't understand what's happening. The social media was really on the top, but the homepage was not founding. We figure out that the homepage, unfortunately, wasn't done in the right way, but we managed to correct it as soon as possible. And then suddenly, even a negative review came on LinkedIn, which was kind of little, I don't know what's going, maybe, I don't know, I don't want to say competitors or whatever. Somebody starting to say negative reviews, but even this situation, we tried to count the clients. And we came up with an idea to reply in a very polite way and reply to this person, and in the end say, listen, you are even not one of our clients, but if you wanna speak, why not? Blah blah blah. Anyway, long story short, we managed to put everything upside down thanks all the digital marketing. Everything upside down, and he got even a new job, a new client through this negative review, which this client got in love with the answer and say, hey, I need you because you are speaking people to people, and I really love how you replied. From this one, we realized that this kind of clients, they could be the new potential clients. So we discover one little town close to Zurich where there is many villas, many potential private clients. And together with the clients, we decided to open the second branch in that place. And this is gonna happen pretty soon. And I'm pretty sure very, very successful.
Yeah, this is all really, really good. Now, what I want to be clear on is, we're talking about a second brand we created when there was an existing brand there. And I loved how you went through all the practical steps of starting basically from the beginning and using marketing on a digital platform to make this happen. I've noticed, and this is actually something that I've struggled with from time to time. I myself have a couple different brands out there. And how do you avoid getting them confused? So let's say, for example, let's say that you are simultaneously in the marketing business and you're also a personal trainer, and you want to promote yourself as being both. So you have your social media channels, you have your mailing list, you have everything you need, and you're simultaneously a marketing leader and you're a personal trainer. How do you promote both businesses without looking scattered?
Okay, no, the case that we had is the same company opening a second branch. But okay, in this case, actually, we have something in house, because in 2015 we opened a completely different business. We invested in some linen fabrics production. And this is very interesting what you said, because we managed even here to create two different marketing for two different companies. For example, the company of Floridia, the Floridia Creative, which was doing all the marketing first for the Floridia Creative, plus for all the clients of Floridia Creative, and even the marketing for another business next to it. I think first of all, you need a team. I mean, we are a team of nine, and we meet twice a week. We are all working remotely, but we meet on Zoom twice a week, and we discuss all the team and all the jobs to do. And at one point, you know, you have to switch on something and switch off something else. I mean, you have to focus first on one project, finish the task on that project, and then force yourself on switch it off and working on several other things. I don't think it's something impossible. I think it's something that if you have the right team, it's easy to do. Right now, we are working with six different clients, and for all of them, we are doing a different marketing, different strategies, and so on. So it is possible if you have the right team on your side, and if you can delegate, and you know, and it is easy to do. Not easy. That is it's a hard job to do, but it's doable. Why not?
Wow. All right. So here's another relative question here. Let's say somebody was in one business. Mm-hmm. They decide that they want to move into another business, and they want to transition out of the previous business. This mm-hmm. is somewhere where I got stuck for several years until I found my own answer to it, which is what I do now. Mm-hmm. How can one use marketing, or what other tactics, advice would you have for somebody who, let me give you an example of this. I remember, if you go back about 10 years or so, back when website conversion consulting was actually a major separate discipline, I entered the ranks of that. I started a website conversion consulting firm, which did quite well. Before mm-hmm. that, I owned a web development firm, which I shut down. So there was a conference in San Diego I was going to in 2011. I had just gotten to the point where all the assets for the website conversion consulting firm were up and running. We were off to the races. And this was going to be my big coming out party for my website conversion consulting company. Well, I get mm-hmm. to the event, and one of the early speakers is a previous client of mine from back when I used to do the web development stuff 5 years earlier. And so mm-hmm. she thinks she's doing me some kind of favor by noticing me in the audience, and then telling the audience how good I was at squeeze pages. And if you're still using the term squeeze pages, you're really dating yourself. And then she actually claimed that she mailed a box of business cards to me that she had collected from people at events and had entered them in one shopping cart. And I actually had to stand up in the middle of that and say, folks, this never happened, because I would have fired her if she had even asked me to do that. Because that's just that form of assumptive consent was never a good thing. I mean, even way before GDPR and all this other stuff. Yeah. So here's the damage it did. I was trying to have conversations about website conversion consulting, and people would actually, like, you know, give me that waving dismissive gesture and say, yeah, we have experts for that. How much for a squeeze page? I never spoke with her again after that. Believe me, I was not happy at all. So that's my story. And it seemed like for years and years and years, I kept getting pegged to this. I mean, I went from website conversion consulting. Once that started to become more of a duh than a separate discipline, I moved to product launches, and I was a product launch maestro for hire for 2 years, and it was fun. And then I ultimately ended up where I am now, which is working with entrepreneurs to help them launch their podcasts, their key networking, client attraction, celebrity expert branding tool.
Which is what you love to do, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And one of our sweet spots is we work with clients who want to enter a new market where they have, where they don't yet have clients, they don't yet have case studies, they don't yet have really a track record, and have them host a podcast about that topic. And who are some of their early interview guests? Their clients, their prospective clients, people who could be clients of their firm or their whatever it is they do. They interview prospective affiliates and business allies to build their network. And by becoming a portal of information about that thing that they want to become known for, they establish a reputation in the market, even as they're in the prospect of attracting customers. Gee, if I had known about podcasting in 2011, would life have been a little bit different for me? So,
yeah, of course,
launching a podcast properly is not easy, but go ahead.
I would suggest something before that. I would suggest that if somebody has an idea, you should step on top of it. Like, you should see your ideas in a different angle, in a different perspective, you know, and asking yourself question, is this really something that it could work? Is it something that I should try or not? But, you know, being a little bit detached from the idea itself, you know, like, and then for sure, you know, testing and asking question. I got so many clients that, you know, sometimes we work even with startups and so on. And when I ask, hey guys, how many time are you testing? How many time did you ask question to your potential clients? Oh, wow, lots of time. I mean, at least 20, 30 people we interview and so on. And this is the biggest mistake that many do. Many believe that they have an idea, they just ask friends and family, maybe they reach 100 people, they ask those 100 people, they told them, oh yes, that's a good idea. In real, not. In real, if you have a new idea, you pick up the phone and for a month, you called people 8 hours a day, and then you understand if your ideas could work. And actually, even before doing the idea, you could even start to sell the idea and you know, understand how it's gonna work. And if you have only 1% of those people that you will call and say, hey, yes, I like it and I'm ready to pay now, then you understand, okay, it's the time that I have to switch from my old business to my new business. And of course, another thing that I suggest, never jump too crazy. I mean, keep at the beginning one foot on one side, one foot on the other side. Hard work for a couple of months. Try to understand if the new ideas could be your next level in life, and then step completely on the new idea, on the new business that you want to launch.
Well, correct. And you know, what's funny is, when people ask their friends and family, we're all familiar with that cliche. Your friends and family are actually the least likely to ever buy from you. Believe me, I've tried to market services to friends and it just doesn't work out, man. I tell you, I heard a saying somewhere, I don't know who rightfully has the attribute for this. So if somebody's listening and they know who the actual author of this quote is, please write in and tell me, and I will praise them for saying it, is you have a much better chance of becoming friends with your clients than you do of turning your friends into clients.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And you know, it's there is two kind of, you might get two kind of feedback. Unfortunately, because feedback number one is the polite feedback, like your best friend is going to tell you, oh, wow, yes, you should do it. It's great, blah, blah, blah. But try to ask to that friend, okay, would you pay right now? I'm pretty sure the friend would say, 90% of the time would say, no, listen, I have other business right now to do.
Oh, yeah.
And the second one is the one that, you know, they are completely negative. Unfortunately, I had this one with my friends or my close friends, and sometimes even with family, that, you know, if you have some ideas and you suddenly somebody else, they look at you like you go much higher than your friends, than your circle and so on, suddenly the feedback, they might come more negative than positive or neutral, but more negative. Why? Because suddenly people, they feel like, oh my gosh, John, where are you going? Why you're dreaming so high? Hey, come down a little bit. And so people, friends and family, sometimes they can give you even not only polite, which doesn't bring anything, but even too much negative feedback. I don't know if it ever happened to you, somebody telling you, no, come on, don't do it. You will never work and so on.
Well, and what you get around family and friends sometimes, I've seen this phenomenon, is they ask you like 20 questions about what it is you do. They don't really even understand your industry. They're just saying, well, we just want to know more. We just want to know more. And ultimately, it gets to the point where they come up with some punchline. Like back when I was in web development, I mentioned, among other things, as we worked with clients to set up very simple but powerful, flexible e-commerce solutions so they can sell their products and services. And I mentioned that part of this was having them enroll in a shopping cart software. Back at the time, one shopping cart was one of the major ones. They're still around, but there are other players in the market now. And as soon as I said mm-hmm. shopping cart, I'd say, oh, you mean like a buggy at the grocery store? It's like, you. I mean, here's what I discovered. When you're in those situations like that, I found a mechanism that actually helps to bifurcate. Is I'll say something like, well, you know what, this is a family thing, and I'm really kind of switched off as far as work, or, you know, we're hanging out as, you know, we're all buddies here, and yeah, I'm just not in that work vibe right now. You get what I'm saying, pal? So if you're really interested in this, I'd love to speak with you with it. So how about we get on our phones now and let's set up a day and time where you and I can lean in together and focus on learning more about how this works. I'd love to do this with you. I just want to be in a headspace for me to do it most effectively. And you can not only deflect that conversation, but anybody else who's going to jump in with their pointless questions who are just going to be annoying, they get the same picture, which is, hey, if you want to talk business with this guy, be serious about talking business. and I've got friends of friends as clients that way.
Wow, that's awesome. That's really good. Yeah, it's kind of you have to be a very strong shift. Like you really have to sit and say to the friend, hey, sorry, let's take apart. Hey, how are you doing? Blah blah blah. Just let's speak only about business and let me understand if you can help me. And sometimes you really have to shake your friend and say, please tell me the truth. Please tell me the truth, even if you don't like this stuff. Even if you don't like it, please have the courage to say, hey, listen, Jan, shit, don't do it, or something like that. Uh-huh. Because this is what people need, you know? Like, if you want to launch a new business, this is the crucial thing that you need. Is the cruel through what people really think, because in the end it's people that out there giving you money, giving you the business, the opportunity to grow the business. And you know, if this doesn't work, it's you know, it's not family and friends helping you.
Yeah certainly. And again, you're more likely to become friends with your clients than you are to turn your friends into clients. It's interesting. Absolutely. How that works, but that's just the case. So when I see these memes about support your friends, okay, to a degree, that's the case. And I found this out, a friend of mine, God rest his soul, he was a top 40 performing artist, and I met him at one of his fan dinners. We ended up becoming friends, like real friends. At the same time, I thought, wouldn't it be cool to have this guy as a client and to actually work with him to craft his digital marketing presence? See, I'm learning. And I found out after about five tries, he just didn't want to speak about that with me. It's because he viewed me as somebody who was a buddy, who was a pal, somebody who he associated with when he wasn't thinking too much about work. However, he referred two clients to me, one of which I closed. It was a big ticket. So think about how your friends and family, while they may not understand what you do, and why it may not necessarily even be a good idea to work with them, because now you may be mixing relationships more than perhaps you should given your tolerance levels, because they'd be advocates for you.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So think about rather than selling those Cutco knives to Aunt Janie, think about who Aunt Janie knows who might want to buy the knives.
Yeah.
If we want to use that analogy. Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. And sometimes, you know, you have maybe even to ask in a different way, because to your auntie, maybe she doesn't listen to you, but maybe somebody else selling the same, did you say knives?
Knives, yeah.
selling the same knives, maybe the neighbors goes directly to your auntie and say, hey, listen, I have great knives. Look at them. What do you think? You want to buy one? And you never had the courage to, you know, to ask directly and strong to your family and friends. But another thing that I wanted to say is, it's funny, I don't know if it happened to you. It happened to me a couple of times that people, you understand the great feedback, the best feedback, how people reply to you.
Yeah.
And how people reply, I mean, there is people that they listen. They listen just to reply. So when you start a conversation, you see in their eyes that they are ready to tell you something, even if you didn't explain yet what you're doing, what's your new business, or what you want to say. And those are the people that they already have a standard answer for you. And most of the time it can be, oh yes, it's going to be good, don't worry, blah, blah, blah. And on the other side, there is family and friends as well. People that they really, if you explain your product, your service, and so on, and people don't reply immediately, but there is those few seconds of silence that they try to understand. Those are the people that you have to trust the most. I mean, it can be friends, it can be clients, and so on. But it's so interesting. It happened to me so many times that there is some people that they listen to reply, and some other that they really listen to understand.
For some reason, I'm thinking of somebody I knew years ago. His job was he was a salesman. He sold plastic cups to restaurants and bars. You know, like plastic cups you put drinks in.
Yeah.
So he told a story about a time that he went into a restaurant that was within this territory, and they placed an order for some 8-ounce cups, some 12-ounce cups, some 16-ounce cups. And the next thing he said is, what about 4-ounce cups? You need some 4-ounce cups? Now, 4-ounce cups are about the size of a shot glass. But simply because he mentioned very casually, hey, you need any 4-ounce cups? It got them thinking, what could we do with a 4-ounce cup? They ended up buying like a whole box of them. Because there are a lot of things you can do with 4-ounce cups. You can use them as shot glasses. You can use them to give away samples. You can use them to serve small. You can use them to serve like small portions of snacks. You can use them to serve condiments.
Of course.
I mean, the use for them just goes on and on and on. But just because he happened to ask offhand, hey, you need any 4-ounce cups?
Yeah.
Up getting a nice bump on his order. It's just the idea that you introduce something to someone they've never necessarily thought of can get them thinking creatively.
Absolutely. We go into sale here, and I love this conversation. I mean, it's sometimes, you know, you have to dare and try to understand how you could solve a problem. Maybe there is people that they have a problem, but they still don't know that they have it. So it's that kind of something in between pushing and not pushing too much, But you see, he made a great thing.
It was an offhand comment. He happened to also sell 4 ounce cups. He just said, "You need anybody? You need any?"
Yeah. And like this is another great. I mean, I love. I don't know if you do, but I love cold calling. I mean, it's I really love cold calling.
You and I differ. But actually, that's a great place for this conversation to wrap up because we have about five more minutes. I would like to hear a new point of view. See, this is another value of podcasting, having mastermind level conversations, is you may find yourself seeing a new point of view. I have not met many people who actually love cold calling and will spontaneously enter that thought into a conversation. So please, John, tell us. I got my pad of paper and two pens out. I'm ready to take notes. Go.
Cool. So just very, very short. I can tell you one thing. If it goes about cold calling, first of all, you know, it's all in percentage. Like if you call 100 or if you call 1,000 people and so on, it's not my main job doing that. But, you know, sometimes I call many people. The trick that I can give is that you have to count the no's. Like you have to count all the no, and you have to have a list. So I have a list of 100 people, and you have to say yes every time somebody give you a no. I'm not interested. No, sometimes even very, very rude way. But count, make a little cross on 99 of them, because number 100, he will say yes. So if you're thinking of this way, like you have a list and you are proud of the people that they deny, the people that they say no, because once you reach a certain number, usually I do by hundreds, okay? So I'm happy if somebody say me no, not interested. Okay, next, no, not interested. Next, because I want to reach number 100, because number 100 will say yes. And this is, if you think in this way, you are happy to call, and people on the other side will feel that you are happy. And by being happy and be honest with the people, you know, suddenly they feel your energy. They feel that you are not trying to sell something very hard or not trying to be annoying them. You cannot imagine how many happy conversations I had lately on my cold calls. And really, I love because we start to say stories and so on. And you keep always gentle. Of course, there is people telling, hey, listen, who the heck are you? Go away and so on.
Yeah.
But most of the people, believe me, most of the people, if you go with this intention that you are happy about the people that they say to you no in your face, you don't have to take like something negative. The no, it's soon is a yes. And in fact, the no, you should put a K and a W in the end, because the real reason why people say no is because they don't know. They don't know you, they don't know your products, and they are not able yet to trust you. So it's a normal thing that we do. As soon as we don't trust anybody, the first instinct is to say no. But in real, they say, I don't know you, you know? This is the difference. If you start to think like this, you will see that your cold call way will, you know, will get better and better. But I think we are almost done, and cold call, we should have another call for just speaking only about the cold call.
Well, maybe we can have you back for an encore in a few months here. Let's keep that in mind. So what I want to do now is I want to invite all of our listeners, John Filippo Floridia has been our guest today, or John Filippo Floridia, forgive me. So excited by this conversation and seeing a new point of view about cold calling. You want to visit his website. It's www.floridia.com. And our United States listeners, that's not spelled too much differently from Florida, except with an extra D and an extra I. Let me do it for you. www.floridia.com. FlirtDDIA.com. Flirtdia.com. It's a really interesting website. It's got pictures of Super Mario Brothers on the homepage. That in itself should be sufficient reason for you to at least check it out. I love nostalgia trips myself. So check that out. There are some resources for you. There are some connections for you. You can discover more about how to use digital marketing to grow your business. See, I'm going to break myself of that habit. And there you go. If you also find yourself intrigued about working with John, you just scroll down that page and you'll find the opportunity to find your way onto his calendar so that you can have a 30-minute conversation that would actually be a warm conversation when you mentioned you heard him on the Business Creators Radio Show. And once again, www.flirtdia.com. With that, my friend, John Filippo Flirtdia, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been an honor, and believe me, an education.
Adam, thank you.
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. While you're there, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.